Thanks for listening to the Suzy Larson Life podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Suzy Larson Live. Always, always so honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, many years ago, I spoke with a woman whose husband had died suddenly, and he seemed too young to die. I think he was in his late 40s, early 50s, and he died suddenly from a cardiac event. And they loved each other. She learned after the fact that their finances were a mess. He hadn't paid taxes in a while. I think he'd allowed his life insurance to lapse. And I don't remember fully the whole conversation, but I remember how traumatized she was. She not only grieved the sudden loss of this man that she deeply loved, she felt profound betrayal and even anger that he didn't take care of their affairs or didn't let her know where things were at. So she said to me, "If I ever write a book on this, I'm going to title it The Business of Dying." And I thought, that's actually a brilliant idea. And I tried to keep up with her, but then she moved away and she got married again. I don't think she ever wrote that book. I have not seen it out on the market. But there were so many logistics for her to manage. I remember my hubby stepping in and trying to help initially when her husband had just died. But she almost had to postpone grief as a wife to figure out what to do for her family now that her husband was gone. Well, we just were prayerfully thinking about what would it be like to do a series on Suzy Larson Live on living with the end in mind, all the different aspects of living with the end in mind, you know, covering heaven, covering a biblical perspective on eternity, the scripture that says we don't fix our eyes on what's temporary, but what's on eternal, because the things you can see are temporary and they'll pass away. So how do you do that in the land of the living? When God says He's going to make all things new, that is the ultimate redemption, but we also see His goodness in the land of the living. What does that have to do with eternity? Well, today we're going to talk about kind of like this friend's book title, suggested book title, The Business Side of Dying. What kinds of things should you have in place in the event that your spouse or you were to die suddenly? We don't want that to seem morbid. We want to be wise about it. You know, we don't want to just put our head in the sand and act like that's never going to happen. I mean, life is a gift. Psalm 90:12 says, "Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Another translation is to teach us to understand the brevity of life, so that we can gain a heart of wisdom. When we don't take for granted that we'll have tomorrow, I think we'll live more fully into today, you know? Financial advisor Aaron Lindberg joins me today for this conversation. I want to tell you, we're going to give away a handful of copies of my book, Fully Alive, Learning to Flourish, Mind, Body, and Spirit. And the reason I wanted to give that away today is because as we're talking about life, Jesus came to give life and life abundantly. It's the enemy who tries to rob you blind. And there are so many Christians who live knowing they're saved, but they don't know they're loved. They're limping all the way into eternity, but it doesn't have to be that way. That book is all about inner healing, addressing fear and shame and insecurity and even selfishness. I love that book. It's one of my signature books. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. Quick announcement before we hear from Aaron. You were all over the upper Midwest and in Connecticut as far as radio signals, right? But we've got listeners in 100 countries via podcast. And if you're listening in the winter months, you may notice on some of our radio signals, we have to power down in the evening hours. So that affects the clarity of the signal. So if you've noticed that and are frustrated by it, go ahead and go to the App Store. It's free. Download the Faith Radio app because you can live stream from anywhere. You can catch the podcast after the fact. Search Faith Radio Network in your app store. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Aaron Lindberg is one of the principals of Gen Financial Management. He serves as both chief investment officer and a financial advisor. He excels at helping families master their finances in this increasingly complex and volatile investment environment. His investment career began in 1996 and has touched many facets of the financial world. Over 20 years ago, Aaron began to work with wealth management clients and fell in love with the opportunity to make a positive, long-lasting difference in the lives of clients. He's also, and I love this, very passionate about philanthropy in his personal life. He's been involved in ministry work and mission opportunities Belize and Mexico for the past 10 years. And what started as a one-time family mission trip has evolved into deep roots and lifelong relationships. He resides in Plymouth, Minnesota with Rochelle, his wife of 25 years. They have four adult children with whom they love seeking new adventures. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us today. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Looking forward to the conversation. So before we dig into the, you know, I don't know how to, you know, I think The Business of Dying is kind of a catchy title, and it really, there are logistics we need to look at. Before we do that, though, let's just make it personal. What has God been impressing upon your heart these days, just as you follow him?
You know, I've been reflecting on that, you know, a bit this last week, you know, since we last chatted. And, you know, what's kind of been the reoccurring theme is a, you know, a super common verse that that we're all familiar with, that the Holy Spirit just illuminated to me in a fresh way a couple of years ago. And so it's been stewing in my mind for quite some time. And, you know, it was really kind of come back this last week. And I think it'll tie in with where we're going, actually. So it's the story that's in both Matthew and Mark, where the Pharisees are, you know, attempting to trap Jesus into whether it's right or not to pay taxes to Caesar. And, you know, basically the text is, you know, Jesus says, you know, why are you trying to trap me? You know, bring me this denarius and let me look at it. So they bring him the coin and ask, you know, and he asks them, you know, whose image is on this? And what is the inscription? So they reply, of course, that it's Caesar's. And Jesus says, you know, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And, you know, we hear this, you know, periodically in the financial world, you know, spend a lot of time thinking about taxes and what have you. And I think a lot of people, you know, that's where their focus is on this verse. And I think what's happening is that we're missing the big point. And, you know, how do we know what something belongs to or who something belongs to? Mm. You know, and in here it tells us, you know, it's, you know, whose image is on this? And so on the coin, yeah, it's Caesar's. And so we, you know, we owe him, you know, what is his. But where is God's image, right? And, you know, mm-hmm. you know, we're created in his image. You know, we are his image. And you know, and therefore we owe him all of us.
Our lives. Love it. Mm. And then to see others who are made in his image, you know, the least of these, the lost, the hurting, the broken. And to see, you know, they're image bearers, and mm-hmm. we could offer our lives to help those in need. We start to see our whole life, because the Bible says, offer your lives as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable, you know?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's great.
And, I mean, and for us, I mean, that's a lot of what we do. You know, we talk about, you know, money being the how, and, you know, we'll talk through some of these practical aspects, you know, as we go here, but so much of the time we end up spending is, you know, peeling back to, you know, why? You know, why are we doing this? You know, why is this important? Why do we need to be thinking about this?
Wow, so good. How and when did you first sense the call? Because as a believer, you're a serious follower of Christ. And so you're calling into the financial world. I mean, Gen Financial to me is amazing, because the heart that you guys have for kingdom work, for missions, and I do have to just give a shameless plug that if you're someone who's a Christian, who's a giver, I mean, we've been with a different financial organization before, and they constantly told us we gave away too much. And when we came to Gen, it was like, how can we support your convictions? It was such a different experience. And I just got to say, that is the heartbeat of Gen Financial. I can't even tell you how much I love it, because everybody that I've met so far, I've only met a few handful, but they're consistently the same. They're leaning in to the kingdom, going, how can we leverage what God has given us for the bigger story in the kingdom? So I just have to say that, and just meeting you and chatting with you on the phone last week, it was exactly the same thing. So all that to say, this is a calling for you. So when and how did you get the sense of calling around finances?
You know, honestly, it felt like a non-strategic, just, you know, drift over time. It was, when I very first started, you know, I was really drawn to the institutional side. It seemed glamorous and exciting and fast-paced and what have you. And I spent about a decade writing investment research. And, you know, my clients were institutions. And so they were professional money managers. They weren't managing their own money. And I was having coffee with a friend who was an insurance agent, and just kind of lamenting my, you know, my institutional clients that, you know, kind of, what have you done for me lately? Hey, that was great that we avoided this loss or made this profit or what have you, but let's, you know, what do we do next? And so I was just kind of sharing with him that I was on this, you know, hamster wheel of ideas. And that, you know, that, I mean, it was neat because we were involved in cutting edge stuff, but, you know, it really wasn't rewarding. And he just said, you know, you have this, you know, financial planning DNA from your early days, because I had spent a number of years with American Express at the time, IDS, developing investment products for them. And he said, you know, why don't you partner with me and I'll refer you financial planning clients, and you can just see, you can keep running your research business and just, you know, put a toe in the water. And it was fantastic. You know, I ran both businesses. You know, my wife was home with our four kids, and so, you know, I can't just shut one thing off and jump in and try something else, because it sounded, you know, more rewarding. So we ran them both together for a number of years, and after the first year, it was really clear that, yeah, this is where I really want to be, where I really feel like I can make an impact. And wow, now we're 20-some years later.
Amazing. Wow. We're going to pause here. When we come back, I want to talk with you about my hubby, his company. Once a year, the finance guy that oversees their retirement programs came in to the office, and he just answers questions. And he told Kev a story about somebody who didn't change the beneficiary on their retirement account. They forgot. And that money went to somebody, their ex, and not to their children. And how he said those kinds of mistakes happen all the time. So we're going to talk about some of the things that have happened that you don't mean for them to, but how can you be wise? You're not operating in fear, but just wisdom and proactivity when it comes to assigning beneficiaries, when it comes to accounts. How much should you have in savings? What kind of life insurance policy should you have? And as Aaron said in my phone conversation, it's all relative to everybody. There's not a one-size-fits-all, but what's wisdom call for? Talking to Aaron Lindbergh, and this is part of the series of Living with the End in Mind. And today we're literally talking about the business side of dying. What kind of ducks do you need to have in a row should you pass away unexpectedly, or your spouse? Great conversation. More with Aaron Lindbergh in just a moment. Hi, I'm Suzy Larson, host of Suzy Larson Live, and I want to encourage you to consider becoming a global missionary if you're not one already. When you sponsor a child with the ministry of One Child, you're linked with a boy or girl who will know you by name and treasure the thought that you care about them. Most of them will pray for you daily. If you write them, they'll write you back. The child you sponsor will receive educational assistance, supplemental food, clothing, health care, services, and opportunities for personal love and encouragement. But most of all, the gospel of Jesus Christ. The cost is just $39 a month, a little more than a dollar a day. You can't necessarily change the entire world on your own, but what if you could change the world for one? Sponsor a child now at myfaithradio.com. Go, go tell the world about me. I was dead, but now I live. I've got to go now for a little while. But goodbye is not the end. Thanks for tuning into Suzy Larson Live. Talking to Aaron Lindbergh today. He's a financial advisor, and this is part of a series that we're doing once a week for several weeks in a row, as long as we just feel like we're supposed to walk this out, but living with the end in mind. And today, specifically, we're talking about the, quote, business side of dying. How do you get your ducks in a row? What kind of paperwork, finances, and those kinds of things? And at the opening of the show, I told a story of a gal that I knew years ago whose husband had died suddenly, and she loved him. They were so tight. He managed the finances. She had no idea that he hadn't been paying taxes, and I think he'd let their life insurance lapse, if I remember right. I'm not sure about that, but I do remember it was a financial catastrophe as well as just an absolute tragedy. And so her grief was just twofold. She loved him, missed him, and then felt so betrayed. So we're just wanting to be proactive. What do we do ahead of time just to make things you know, make that grief process easier and make it easier on the family? So, Aaron, I'm telling you, my hubby was in recently at the office, and the financial advisor that oversees all the retirement accounts for these employees comes in once a year just to answer questions. And he really hit hard the idea of keeping up to date on your beneficiaries. And he told a story of a person who they got divorced, but they forgot to change the beneficiary on their retirement account. And then they died suddenly, and the kids didn't get any of that retirement, and it went to the ex. And he said there was no loophole. There was no reversing that decision. And he said, you wouldn't believe how often that happens. Speak to that idea and maybe what you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those crucial items, and you know, it's maybe even like, you know, changing the oil on your car. Sometimes you know you're doing it more frequently than is necessary, just keeps you safe. And so for us, I mean, part of our process is that we review the beneficiaries, you know, at least once a year. And that may seem, you know, really excessive over the course of a 20 or 30 year relationship with someone, but you know, as people change jobs or life changes or, you know, things happen, the way that you stated is really true. I mean, we need to have these set up correctly.
I've heard stories too of setups where there's contingencies even with the kids. Let's say if both parents were to die and one of the children, you know, are, you know, embroiled in addiction, mm-hmm. that there would be contingencies around that. Speak to something like that, things that people don't even probably think about.
Yeah, that's a good question. And the I mean, the range of how much control you can exercise is almost unlimited. You know, from the most basic sense is just having the right people listed in the right order is you know, it will get you 99% of the way there for most, you know, for most folks. And that can be done with beneficiary designation that can flow through your will. The if you need to exercise restrictions when after you're dead, then you're going to end up using, you know, a trust as the instrument to do that. And
so an executor, you'd have somebody kind of overseeing then?
So yeah, you'd appoint a trustee or even a string of them, you know, depending on who's, you know, alive or able or willing to serve in the future. And that would be the person who would be responsible for administering, you know, the rules that you've set up. And I've seen kind of everything across the board from, you know, the trust created by a gentleman who had adult children, of which, you know, some were irresponsible, and you know, he didn't see it as loving or being a good steward of those dollars to just turn them over. And so, you know, one kid may just get the money outright, whereas, you know, another one had very, very severe restrictions on there where, in fact, to get his payment, he'd need to stop in person monthly, pass a drug test, and show a pay stub.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So
demonstrate
that he's working and contributing, you
wow.
know, and being clean. So, I mean, that's a really, obviously, a really extreme example. You know, most of the time, you know, you're putting in their provisions for, hey, we want the money to go at this age and then at that age and then at that age. And, you know, for me, when we're doing that for, you know, for minor kids, you know, I like to stage it out and I like to start with a smaller chunk, you know, initially. So whatever ages, just say they're, you know, 25, 30 and 35, I'd shoot for a smaller percentage. Maybe they get 15% at 25, you know, and then, you know, 30% and then the rest, something like that. So that, as they're learning, you know, if they make mistakes early on, you know, it's done a lot less damage.
Wow, that's so interesting. If you want to watch a great movie on just a trust and irresponsibility and learning responsibility, The Ultimate Gift, I don't know, Aaron, if you've seen that. It's a faith-based film, but it's so fantastic. And we have some friends who helped finance that film, and it's you got to see it. It's just fantastic. In fact, there's three of them in a row. That first one was amazing. This wealthy grandpa father leaves the kids, but he kind of determines that some of them aren't even in the will, but one that he really sees potential in, but he has to fulfill all of these tasks, and in the process he finds his heart. It's so powerful. But anyway,
yeah, check that out. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so good. But you know, how about how do people typically like manage if you've got young adults that are married? How does a person manage in grandkids? I mean, how do you just determine what's the kind of the standard practice for, like, if you've got life insurance, how that gets divvied up with, you know, with spouses of your kids and then grandkids?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, for me, I don't have a hard and fast rule of thumb on that. It's like so many of these things where, you know, we're really trying to create the solution that our clients are looking for. but to also ask, you know, challenging questions about, you know, what impacts that this might have. I mean, one interesting one that, you know, that we'd come across is, okay, if I have, you know, three kids and, you know, two of them are following the Lord and living the life the way that I would, you know, love to see, and one of them's not, and they're, you know, living totally contrary to my beliefs. You know, do I treat somebody differently in that, you know, in that instance? And it's not a clear-cut answer, I don't feel, because on the one hand, you know, you say, well, you know, I really want to, they're not my resources, they're the Lord's, I'm trying to be a great steward of these, and that wouldn't be great stewardship. But on the other side of it, you know, as you think about that, you know, that child just as a, you know, a child of God, really, you know, after you pass away, what's the impact that it's going to have on them?
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you, mm-hmm. for example, said, nope, I'm not going to, this isn't good stewardship, I'm going to give it to the other two, you know, what are the odds, you know, what is the impact of that on that person potentially, you know, developing a real faith relationship?
Boy, it's a good question to ask. Have you seen people come up with those kinds of contingencies that were just seemed profoundly wise to you, maybe something you hadn't thought of before?
One recently that I think is awesome is around charitable beneficiaries. And that's something that we've done, you know, many times over the years, but this approach was unique and I thought it was great. So it was somebody who had three kids, and what they did is they invented a fourth kid, which was their charitable bucket. And so than splitting three ways, they decide, hey, we're going to split our, you know, our wealth and our stuff four ways. And then we're going to designate this one quarter towards, you know, ministries that we want to support.
Love that. Wow, that's so fantastic. How about a big mistake, something you said that, you know, that backfired on someone?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the big one there is really what, one of the things is what you highlighted earlier around, you know, just being diligent in checking these beneficiaries and doing things, because it's typically not anybody being malicious. It's just unintended consequences, right? You know, it was my spouse, somebody died, somebody was remarried, you know, money was going to one of my kids, they died, now it's with their spouse instead of my grandkids, or, you know, what have you. I mean, for us, it's been primarily, you know, unintended consequences of,
sure.
of things just not being, you know, monitored.
Is it standard practice then to, the money's coming from your retirement, your life insurance, to go down through the bloodline basically to your child and then to your grandchild? Or do you often see people designate to the child's spouse, especially depending on how long they've been married? Or is it just across the board from what you see?
It's truly across the board. I mean, the most common thing that you'd see is money goes to spouse and then kids and then grandkids. But it, you know, that's not always the wisest thing. And I actually advocated for this in my family, and it was a funny situation, because it's easier to do it for a client. But you know, in this case, I had one remaining living grandparent, and then that money was going to go to their two children and my dad, and it was exactly one of those situations that you described. So it was my mom's parents. She had already passed away, and they opted to take her, you know, portion and send it to my dad.
Wow.
And
it's beautiful.
Yeah. And but
he was faithful husband.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. But the thing that I would consider is, you know, a lot of times people are living so long that, you know, their children are 60 or 70, and, you know, and they're in retirement, and them using, you know, the funds at this point might not actually be the best. Maybe it's wiser to skip a generation.
Wow. Okay. We got to pause here. When we come back, I'm also going to ask about just some basics that we should have in order, just so we know that our ducks are in a row. Talking to financial advisor Aaron Lindberg, and we'll be back in a minute.
Still, oh, rest.
Thanks for tuning into Suzy Larson Live. Talking to Aaron Lindberg. He's a financial advisor with Gen Financial. That's G-E-N, Gen Financial. And we're doing a series on living with the end in mind, talking about all the different aspects about passing from this life to the next. So we'll be talking to some great friends about heaven, about eternity, about how to live with eternity in mind in the land of the living. But today we're literally talking about the financial aspects of preparing for your transition or your spouse's transition from life to life with Jesus. And I would love to know, Aaron, first of all, I should say, we're going to give a handful of copies away of my book, Fully Alive, Learning to Flourish, Mind, Body, and Spirit. Because if you have breath in your lungs, you might as well live abundantly. And one of the things I want to happen through this show is that you go after the stuff God's promised you. We so passively take and put up with so much from the enemy, but there are promises with your name on them. So go after them. Fully Alive is all about inner healing, about dealing with shame, fear, insecurity, selfishness, all kinds of things. I love that book. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. So Aaron, let's talk about just some basic things that people should have in place right now in the event that death should happen just around the bend.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, I think the primary one we've already hit on, which is making sure those beneficiary designations are in place. You know, any financial asset that you have, an account, an investment account, a retirement account, a bank account, you know, they all can facilitate a beneficiary designation. And it's the simplest thing and probably the most mandatory, you know, piece to have in place is that.
So do you need a finance guy so that, you know, so that somebody has notice of what's in your bank account and who that goes to? And if not, where does it go?
If there's nothing on there, then it follows the state's the state law, which, you know, I think that most people would rather, you know, designate where the, you know, where the funds are going to go rather than just have it follow kids, grandkids, you know, and just kind of right on down the line. And because that's where we end up with those unintended consequences, you know. And I guess maybe one thing to add on to that that would be helpful is that with beneficiary designations, you can split it. Right. So you could say, I want it to go to my spouse first. And then if my spouse isn't there, I want it to go to my four children. And I want it to be split equally or unequally among them. The primary beneficiary, the person, you know, first in line, they don't have the option to just easily change it to somebody else. Basically, they have the ability to say, yes, I'll take this, or I'm going to go ahead and disclaim it and go to the next person in line. So making sure you have that line set up, you know, from the beginning is important.
So interesting. Okay. So again, do you need a finance person so that you've got a record somewhere of designation, or do you go to your bank if you've got an account? I mean, are there forms there, or how does a person do that? I should know that, but I don't.
No, great question. And so you don't have to have a designated person to do it. You just are going to go to whichever institution holds that account, whether it's a bank or a, you know, 401k at work or an investment account. You can honestly just call their 800 number and say, hey, I need to get a beneficiary on this thing. They'll create the form. Right. They'll send it to you. You can put in the people you want and the split that you want, and they'll take care of it.
That's fantastic. And in some cases, some may have, you know, incredible retirement and life insurance equity in their house, and they're thinking, our kids don't need all of this. So I think it's really wise to go, I want some of this to go to my church or to an organization. So we'll get to that one in a minute of talking about inheritance. But how about life insurance? I know you'd said during our phone call, that's really relative to your income and your season and station of life. But how does a person decide how much life insurance they need?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One final thought just on the beneficiary piece that came to mind as you were chatting there, because for many people, their home is a significant resource. And believe it or not, you can essentially put a beneficiary on your house. And this is one where you are going to want to work with a professional. I would connect with a local attorney to execute this document, but it's just called a transfer on death deed. And you file it in the county that you live in. And it essentially does the exact same thing, that at your death or at the second death of myself and my spouse, the deed of the house will automatically transfer to my beneficiaries.
Wow. Okay. That's good to know. All right. And about life insurance, what do you say?
So about life insurance, kind of my starting place would be to say, hey, let's consider, who are you responsible for? You know, typically spouse, kids, you know, it could be parents that you're caring for. And it could be, you know, ministries that you're supporting that you're, you know, actively involved with or financially supporting. It could be a business that you're, you know, that you're involved in the leadership. So it could go beyond just your immediate family, but that would be my starting place is to say, okay, well, first of all, you know, who's going to have a need without me here? Hmm. You know, and then from there, we'll start to evaluate, you know, what does it take to meet those needs? So I might have a mortgage on my house, and as a way to protect my spouse and kids, I might say, hey, I'm going to have enough insurance for sure to pay that off. Because if they could live here and just pay the insurance and the taxes, they'd be okay in that scenario. It may be a time where I'm, you know, I'm young and I'm in my earning years, and without me, my spouse would need, you know, at least a portion of my income. And so then I may need to add, you know, additional insurance on for that.
Very good. Are there certain policies that people should be kind of leery of, or, you know, ones that you prefer?
That's a really good question. I always tell folks I'm product agnostic. And so, you know, we just search for the thing that's the best fit. But when it comes to life insurance, you know, honestly, having term insurance is the easy solution where you're not going to hurt yourself. You know, it's cheap, it's effective. You know, there are other types of life insurance that have other benefits and they have other costs, you know, and they're going to be more complicated. They can work. Like I say, we're not opposed to utilizing those, but the safest starting place would be to use term insurance.
And term is the one that diminishes over time. Once you get older, you don't need as much, right? So it kind of peaks up and then diminishes over time. Is that right?
So the death benefit, you know, could vary. Most of the time it's level. So you say, I'm going to buy $500,000 worth of insurance. And I would tell you, it's like car insurance. You know, if you stop paying, it goes away, and you buy it and it's going to be good for a specific term, 10 years, 20 years, you know, 30 years. And the insurance company will guarantee you your price that you pay, the premium you pay, and the death benefit for that term. When that term expires, you know, then, you know, there's some provisions that will allow you to extend it sometimes, but basically now it's time to start over. So we want to make sure that we get a term that's appropriate for our goal. So in that mortgage example, it may be that I have 12 years left. So if I got a 15-year term, I'd know that, you know, there's money available all the way to the end.
Okay. Interesting. Is there an average, I mean, as far as even around age, do you see an average life insurance dollar amount that you see, or is it really just all over the map?
You know, it really is. If you were to, you know, look online, you'd probably find some rules of thumb, but I struggle with those. I just had a call with a client yesterday who is, you know, what I'd say is, you know, relatively young, early 50s, you know, kind of the youngest is a senior in high school. And as we, you know, as we look at their financial situation, you know, the need is pretty well gone away, and it's gone away at a relatively early age where it's just not required anymore. So, you know, in this case, we're not even going to extend it, where many people, you know, at age 50 would, you know, still have a big mortgage, still be in, you know, high earning years and need to provide that to somebody else. Yeah, it's really tough to just put a number out there.
Yeah. Oh, all right. One last question about the life insurance. We're talking about designated beneficiaries. You want to make sure those are up to date. Life insurance. Would you suggest maybe an auto pay or something? I can't tell you the number of stories I've heard of wives who've lost their husbands only to learn there was a lapse in payment where it was a tight month. They didn't pay. Mm-hmm. And it's so sad. I mean, what do you suggest around that?
I like that idea. Honestly, I like auto pay for everything. It just, you know, it's one of the things that we do as we think about budgeting is, you know, we've got our main bank account and we set everything up to come automatic out of that. And then it just allows us to better control it, right? So then we'll move a certain amount of money to a spending account. And that way we know what that is and we don't, you know, live beyond what we're designating, where otherwise it would be really easy to go back and invade that other account. So I'm a big fan of auto pay across the board. And with life insurance, I would tell you the two most common are either automatic monthly or an annual bill. Yeah, most people don't. I mean, you could, they'll send them to you, but most of the time you don't see that.
Okay. This question came in before we move on. Is there an equation to figure your life insurance annual salary by so many years, for example? I mean, I know it's not a one size fits all, but I would imagine it's relative to your income, right?
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, if you were to look online, you'd find a whole range of them. I'd say if you're in that maybe, you know, 10 to 12 times, you know, that's going to put you in an appropriate range. But I mean, you'll if you were to look, you'll find something that says 15, you'll find something that says 8, you'll find them, you know, kind of all over the map there.
Okay. So we've talked about the designated beneficiaries, talked about life insurance. What other ducks do we have to have in our row just to feel like things are buttoned up pretty good? Any other thoughts? Savings accounts or?
Yeah, a couple of things maybe. Number one that's just really practical is I would say to have a disaster file. And over the last week, I've actually kind of been reflecting on this, like, oh, I've kind of let mine get a little bit stale here. You know, I've seen a lot of different sides of this with my mom passing away and her being the one who really just ran the household finances. You know, my dad's perfectly capable of doing it, but you got to figure out where everything is and who gets paid and where money comes in from and where it needs to go out. And so just having that stuff documented, who to call, right? If one person in the household does all the insurance or does it all, you know, goes into to see your financial advisor. I mean, we see lots of, you know, lots of times where just one spouse comes in. And it's just a normal division of duties, like you do the laundry and I'll vacuum or, you know, whatever. It's not that it's a problem, but that person, it would be really loving for that person to create an easy map for, you know, for their spouse to follow.
So give us an example of what would be in a disaster file.
Passwords, phone numbers.
Call this person.
Yep, call this person.
Call Jen.
Call Jen right away. And a list of the bills, essentially kind of the monthly budget, so you have a sense of what comes out of the bank account and when. You know, this is where our insurance is. This is where our life insurance is. This is you know how much money they're going to provide to you. This is how you get it. You call this number and you tell them that I passed away, and they'll send you the form and they'll take care of the rest. But you know, I mean, account numbers, password. I mean, passwords are a big one.
Yeah, you can imagine you're so shell-shocked by the loss of your spouse that even if you share some of the same passwords, your brain not working, you know, where you're looking at the safe going, I don't know. And so to have a place where you can go that you've kind of rehearsed and practiced that they can walk you through just seems like that would be an absolute lifesaver. I so appreciated when you and I chatted last week how you were saying it's not a bad thing that one person versus the other manages the finances, but where you get lost is if you have zero knowledge of anything that's going on and suddenly you feel like you've got the rug pulled out from underneath you. So it's just kinder, not only one, for the person managing it to stay on top of it. And if you're not staying on top of it, communicate to your spouse. Maybe it's time to switch duties, but two, always to have a really up-to-date disaster file. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk about someone texted in a question about a will versus a trust. And also, when you and I chatted, you brought up Proverbs 13:22. It says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children and his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. And I've heard several Christian finance people say this, that they have differing opinions. Not that they're differing from what the Word says, but there's wisdom in how much do you really leave to your children, especially if you've got a lot of wealth to pass on. We'll talk about that and other things as well. Talking to Aaron Lindberg, he's a financial advisor, and this is our series of Living with the End in Mind. I think it's just wisdom. We'll be back in a minute. Faith Radio podcasts are produced by the listener-supported ministry of Faith Radio. If you're interested in becoming a team member, a donor to this ministry, you can support the podcast anytime and donate at myfaithradio.com. A hope you're having a really great day. Susie Larson here. One of the things we're doing on Susie Larson Live over the next several weeks is once a week we're going to do this series about living with the end in mind. And today we're actually talking about the business of dying, so to speak, the financial side, getting your ducks in a row, kind of so that whoever, if someone suddenly dies, you or your spouse, that they're not so traumatized that they don't even know how to move forward. And so one of the things my guest today, Aaron Lindberg, he's financial advisor with Gen Financial. He's more than that. He's part owner and partner, but designate your beneficiaries and keep those up to date. Look at those every year because relationships change, things change. And there have been stories of some who, let's say they got divorced and they forgot to change the beneficiary on the retirement account and then they died and that retirement money didn't go to the kids or grandkids, it went to the ex. It's just important to stay up on your beneficiaries. He also said life insurance, you know, solid life insurance and auto pay is not a bad idea. Better yet, pay a year bill at a time. And also have a disaster file so that if you're especially the person who does the finances, that you're laying it out, passwords, this is who to call, these are our bills, this is the income, so that they don't have to think too much, that you walk them through so it's as easy as possible for them to step into that role because remember, they're grieving and they're traumatized. One thing we didn't talk about you wanted to mention was establishing guardianship for your kids. I'm wondering if, you know, if you've got young kids and you've not done that, would other family members just automatically step up or talk about the implications of not designating guardianship?
Well, designating it is crucial because, as you can imagine, if you were to, pass away and leave financial resources behind, people may fight and argue about where that should go. And the same thing is true of your kids. There may be varied beliefs around, who should be providing for them and who should be a guardian for them and what that looks like. And, for most people, this is really their biggest question, their biggest concern, beyond the finances is, who's going to care for my children and setting up enough provision that they can do so, in the manner that you wish.
Wow, so good. Okay, the question about, I want to make sure we get to leaving an inheritance and also about kingdom generosity. I want to make sure we've got time for that. But I want to address the question of a trust versus a will. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, and I'll probably even tag onto that, a couple of other just estate planning documents that would be, would be wise to have. But, let's tackle the will, will versus trust first. And if you, if you talk to, 10 attorneys, you probably get 5 that say one way and 5 say another way. Both of these will work. The biggest differentiator for me in terms of what I would prefer is if you want to have controls in place after you're gone, then you use the trust. If, you're at this stage in life where, your beneficiaries are adults or they're ministries and they and the recipients can handle the money in one shot, then, beneficiary designations and will does the trick.
Oh, interesting. That's very clear.
Yeah. And so, there's a little nuance to it, when you get into, large amounts of wealth, but, today, an individual can transfer about $13 million at their death to somebody else without federal estate tax. And, we're in Minnesota here. Ours is, $3 million per person. So as a married couple, we're talking $6 million in Minnesota and $26 million exempt from federal estate tax. So, trying to do, complicated tax planning around that applies to, a really limited, population. And so I'd kind of put that off to probably the back burner and really focus on just the, if I need to exercise control, that's going to be my determining factor.
All righty. Okay, let's talk if we can about Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but a sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, so I'd ask, what kind of inheritance? Right, I think that the natural thought is that, hey, we're talking about money here, I think it needs to go beyond that, right? Beyond just financial blessing, inheriting righteousness and wisdom, and a godly Good. Family line and heritage, and I think that that's crucial, and I think that people sometimes get just too focused on the money, and there's a lot more that goes into it.
Boy, that is such, that brings the passage to life to me, Aaron. I've never been heard anybody talk about it that way, but a good man leaves an inheritance, and you sow kindness, you reap kindness, you sow righteousness, you reap righteousness. You think of all the sowing that you do, and that's a legacy that you're leaving to your kids. What are your thoughts about leaving extreme amounts of wealth to your kids and versus maybe parceling that out and leaving, you know, I mean, how much do they really need compared to what the kingdom can use? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's going to depend on the, you know, on the kid, I think, in some regards. And this is another one where it's an aspect of control. How much control do you want to have, and how much do you want to allow them to have? So whether it's, you say, hey, you know, I have a fair amount of wealth and I'm going to leave it to my kids, but, you know, we've been, you know, talking and working for the last couple of decades on, you know, how we steward the, you know, the resources the Lord has provided for us here. And I'm completely comfortable that if this child gets, you know, whatever, $10 million, that they will, you know, that they'll, you know, continue to support ministries that are important to us, that they'll continue to, you know, serve the kingdom and do this kind of thing, and that it wouldn't be a burden to them, but it would be a blessing. Hmm. You know, I think there's danger, right, in that, and that's why there's, I think, good wisdom in being cautious about just leaving an outright, you know, chunk of money, because, you know, we're trying to bless our kids, right, and having a ton of money is not always a blessing.
Right. I don't know who said it, but somebody once said it only takes four generations of wealth to ruin the character of any family or company, like a family-owned company. If there's all kinds of wealth being passed down, each generation, it's like it weakens the structure unless there's absolute, what you're talking about, you know, sowing in an inheritance of kindness and compassion and philanthropy and kingdom mindset. So, yeah, I feel some caution about you just dumping all kinds of money into the kids if you have it, when there's so many needs around the world, if they're not going to continue what you're doing, if they don't have that same heart. I just mm-hmm. think that's, yeah, thank you for that. Okay, how about just say a word about living generously with an eternal perspective? And I'm specifically thinking of people listening today who are like, I can't even imagine giving $10 million to my kids. I don't have that kind of money. But just all of us truly living, you know, we're blessed to be a blessing relative to whatever's in our hand. Give us an eternal perspective when it comes to our resources.
Yeah, that's really good. We were actually just talking about some of that over the breaks, actually, that, you know, there's been a great debate, it feels like, over the last decade or so around how to handle generosity with, you know, two opposing camps, right? One saying, I want to have the biggest potential impact all in one shot, which essentially means I'm going to accumulate, and when I die, then the funds are going to transfer, whether it's to you know, humans or charitable causes. And the other says, hey, you know what, I'm going to really try to manage this thing down so there's really nothing left. And so whether mm-hmm. that's doing annual gifting to your kids and grandkids along the way, or, you know, really being, you know, generous with, you know, with your giving along the way.
Wow. I'm just thinking about that. Someone who's, you know, I mean, I've heard people say, rather than leave your kids a whole bunch of money, how about you cultivate experiences then while you're still alive? You know, mm-hmm. like plan things. If you've got some excess, plan experiences with them and live to see them experience that. And also, you know, there's something about while you're in the land of the living, sowing into ministries and relying on God, it changes you, right? I mean, I think there's mm-hmm. something about where your treasure is, your heart is. So to live it out on a daily basis seems to me like the ultimate invitation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for me personally, that would be my approach. I certainly would prefer to be, you know, radically generous along the way, because you get to see it and experience it. I mean, whether it's taking a trip with your kids or, you know, making a real impact in ministries that you care about, there's a need today, and I'd prefer to not wait. I'd rather have, you know, smaller reoccurring, you know, impacts than one big one down the way. Mm. You know, Josh on our team, one of the things he always says is, you know, do you want to be the wealthiest you've ever been, you know, on the day that you die? Mm. And that always catches me that, no, yeah, I definitely want to not be close to that.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, I've quoted this stat when we do our fundraisers, but there's a stat that says something like 7% of Christians actually bring in a tithe and offerings that, you know, live where they're sowing into the kingdom and then giving to ministry. So 93% aren't. And again, I'm not saying that with condemnation, but I'm saying churches and ministries are functioning on a fraction of what God intends. And I feel like, man, if you can trust Him with your eternity, what if you start trusting with your finances? You guys would have so much to do as finance guys because we would start to see a revival, you know what I mean, in generosity.
Absolutely.
That is my dream. And it's what I'm praying for.
It is.
Well, Aaron, we had planned for a half an hour interview and we got to spend the whole hour together. It was fantastic. Thank you for what you do for the kingdom and how you help people and how you keep pointing people to Jesus and the kingdom story. I just appreciate that so much. God bless you, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, that was Aaron Lindberg, friends, and we're talking about living with the end in mind. And Angie, my amazing producer, said she's going to link Gen Financial, that's his organization that he's a principal owner in, to our show notes, so you'll find it there. It's just a great, great organization. But this is just an encouragement to just cross the T's and dot the I's, do some of these basic things as you live with the end in mind. And I really think that gives you some peace and some assurance that there's no surprises on the other side, right? We're living with the end in mind, and eternity is going to be awesome. I pray you found some encouragement here today. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to Suzy Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.